Howdy, y'all. Welcome to Components Live. I'm Ren, product marketer at Heretto and your podcast MC.
I'm Patrick, CEO here at Heretto.
And I'm Jared, lead solutions consultant.
Thanks for joining us on our weekly conversation about componentized and structured content. Hope you enjoy this 15 or so minutes of fun talking about everything from data to innovations in AI.
Glad you're catching our live show after it was live and is now a podcast. If you want to join the live show, we stream every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on LinkedIn and YouTube, but you can always find the recording on your favorite podcast app. All right, let's get into it.
Hey, it's Friday. Welcome to Components Live. I'm Patrick Bozick, and I'm here with Jared, and we're going to do our normal thing. So we're going to do a couple of hot topics, a little bit of news.
Half the team?
About 10, 15 minutes. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, man. Casey's like not here all that time, all that often. So
no, but we like it when he's here.
We do.
And Ren, Ren needed a day, just a day off.
Yeah, that's true. She's got a lot going on, but I'm sure she's enjoying it. And two's fun. Four's kind of a crowd. I don't know.
Oh, two's fine. But like, I don't know. I don't like you that much. So
that's
whatever.
True. Nobody does. Anyways, Convex.
Yeah. So you were at Convex. I want to know, this is something I brought up just right before we started. There are obviously topics, and I've heard Convex was great. I saw pictures of the facility, and frankly, I'm a little jealous because it looked like the actual location was very cool.
It was really awesome.
I've heard it. Yeah, I've heard it. I mean, multiple people have been like, that was a sweet location.
It was.
What I'm curious about are conversations that you were a part of or things that you heard that happened outside of the presentations. Like, were there any specific trends or other than, like, we know AI is there. So if it's about AI, cool, we'd love to hear it. But what did you hear outside of the actual sessions that was an interesting or thought provoking?
So starting on a less serious note, and I haven't told you this, I was waiting for components.
Oh, you're springing it on me. You want to get the real time reaction. Good.
Deadly serious. No less than four people walked up to the Heretto booth and said, "Where's Jared?"
Yes.
And we're like, "What?" And they were like, "No, I came up here specifically to talk to Jared." It like became a joke at the conference. So there's one of your water cooler things. Everybody
yes,
likes you
awesome.
better than whoever else we had there.
I miss I miss everybody at Convex. It's a great conference.
Yeah, it is. And we'll have to have you there next year. But in terms of the actual industry, I mean, AI was the big thing this year.
Of course.
Like, no, of course. You know, that's no surprise to anybody. It was kind of like one and a half tracks were kind of AI based.
Okay.
So track one was pretty much exclusively AI. And then there were a few things that kind of bled over into track two that I saw that were very AI focused. And then there was just a lot of it throughout the rest of the conference.
Yep.
There was still some conversation around getting a better place in the organization, selling value, those kinds of
yep.
things, which I think is good, like leadership conversation. You know that, and there was some of that kind of throughout, like breakfast and lunch, and like you know people were still talking about you know how do we approach you know building coalitions and like getting the right systems in place, but just like at DITA Europe, WEU, a few
yep.
months ago, there's no doubt that the industry feels the value of content in a way that it hasn't in a really long time. And there's a general sense of urgency, and there was again a very vibrant energy in the room where people like
yep.
realized that this had to happen and they were the ones that needed to do it. So I think that was kind of my biggest takeaway. I left feeling like really good and really energized, which was cool.
Yeah. So did you describe it as an urgency? Was that urgency, do you think it's driven by fear of what's coming or excitement that like, I mean, for us in the data space, we kind of see like, we see AI tools coming and we're like, hey, cool, structured content right. is great. So like for us, it's not a fear-based thing. When we approach it, it's like, the urgency is this kind of almost like excited anticipation. Is that what you noticed there? Or did you gather that there's like still some fear associated with these things coming to take over roles and things?
You know, it's funny. So there's a little bit of both.
Okay.
there's a lot of excitement. There was, I would say, some concern for people who didn't feel like they had a clear path to extracting value from some of the AI systems and projects. So the people that really felt like they were on a solid foundation, you know, whatever, however you want to qualify that, I think there was more excitement than there was concern at a macro level.
Okay.
That said, it's very common that people are still kind of like, does this change the shape of my role? And either like, I think the whole like, is it going to replace me? I feel like we're a little bit past that now.
Yeah.
Not maybe not universally, but by and large, I think there's more of like, it does it change the value of my role? And sure. The value of my role thing is a little bit more interesting. But I think as people started to really look at that, one of the things that I would, the conversations I would have is I would basically say, anybody here who can work a 40-hour week and get all of their work done, raise your hand. And nobody raised their hand.
Yeah.
Right? Like every content development team, every information development team, all of them are overworked.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody feels that, and they're starting to see that this automation, you know, as they're being asked to do a lot more and they're not being given more resources because nobody is, and there's insane expectations. It might be able to give them their life back a little bit. So instead of having to work 60, 70 hour weeks to just keep up, that there's like, there could be something that could take, you know, 10, 20, 30% of their time and just like give it back to them and like let them have a decent work-life balance. Yeah. So that seemed to be pretty exciting to people. And I think it should be.
And I mean, I've said this multiple of these podcasts at this point, you know, our own integration build of an AI tool into our system has saved me a lot of time. Like whenever I prep for a demo, I lean heavily on Edo, on the AI tool that we've built. And like, I get prepped for those demos much faster and it's much less stressful for me now. And it's just, it's a very simple, like I'm just pasting content in and being like, hey, structure it this way. And it'll build the structure for me. I look at it, I scan it. And I'm like, looks good. Accept the change and move on to the next one. It's so much more efficient than me doing it. I hate to say that. Like I hate so much that a machine is better than me at this. Like
realistically, machines are better than you at a lot of things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. So one thing is like, this is silly, but I love the tactile experience of typing on a keyboard. Like I really do. Okay. And I don't get to do that as much anymore because it just does it.
Yeah. And you can talk to it if you're Casey.
Yeah. I don't ever do that. I've not once used that. Yeah. Maybe I should.
All right. So, I don't think there's really anything else from Convex. You have any other questions?
No. That's pretty good. I know we have one other like main thing that we want to talk about, and it's funny how much it's been coming up lately. So I'll let you introduce the article.
Because I got it into the document first.
Yeah, because it's your article and not mine.
Yeah, it's mine. Yeah. That's not my article. But it is an article that's been making the rounds, and I feel like it was worth putting it in here and talking about it a little bit. So if people haven't seen it, there's an article published by a woman named Sarah Moore. I assume that I'm pronouncing that right, M-O-I-R. Anyways, the article is, you're better at this, right? That's the proper pronunciation.
I'm not better at this. I'm worse. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry, Sarah.
If that's not how you pronounce your last name, I apologize. But yep. The article is great. It's called Doxa's Code is a Broken Promise. It's a pretty strong title. Okay. The attention grabbing. The article is actually quite balanced. And it's something that's really well written and delivered. She focuses really heavily on what I view as like the user experience and therefore the efficiency around Doxa's code and how some of those things have and haven't worked. And like where all those things fall together. And it's a really well-timed article because I feel like this conversation has like really reignited recently. And in some places I think it's being had in a really meaningful and like productive and balanced way. And in other places it feels like it's the vitriol on it has gotten gotten turned up and people are just saying things that make no sense. But this is a great addition to the conversation.
Yeah. I read it and it seems, I think it's like well balanced. I was just in a conversation earlier today where, with a prospective customer and they said, what do you think are the benefits of going to highly structured content like Ditta versus a Doxus code methodology? And it's a good question, but it's a question that, I mean, we can agree or disagree over this, but like, I tend to be very pragmatic about approaches to these kinds of things. I love idealism, but I'm also very pragmatic. And like, there are times where Doxus code is great and it is the right approach for a team. But I think for typical tech pubs, this article highlights some of the real struggles that you have with Doxus code. Like, the assumption is, well, developers are going to be contributing to the documentation, and that's a good thing. And it is. And then we're going to have some writers and they're going to contribute as well. And the assumption is just, let's just get to work and make it fast and it's going to be simple. But it's not that simple, because your tech writers aren't trained often. They're often not trained with things like GitHub. And GitHub is going to be part of your life if you're in a Doxus code methodology. Like, it's some type of source control like that will be your life.
But even on top of that, like, let's say you have everybody really well trained on the Doxus code tool chain and all those types of things. I think the fundamental challenge that really creeps into all of these implementations is that none of them are exactly out of the box. And they all have to, like, conform to certain needs of the organization, and they all end up continuous projects.
That's one of the promises of it, is like, make this fit your organization. But to make it fit is a lot of work.
Right. And that ends up being multiple people.
Right.
So you end up with, and so I talk to a lot of people in this industry, you know, both like in a professional way and just over, you know, drinks whenever I have the opportunity. And I have definitely seen situations where Doxus code makes a ton of sense. The most obvious one is when developers are legitimately 80 to 90% of the writing force. Like, if you're in a situation where most of your content is coming from a developer audience, it makes total sense. But that's not that many organizations when you really boil it down. I think there's a lot of organizations that have to get review and contribution from developers, but like, having them be the bulk of the actual words contributed, I haven't seen that a ton of times. So you end up in this circumstance where you have very often multiple people simply maintaining the tool chain.
Yeah.
And the math just doesn't work. So FTEs are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And they're also single points of failure. So you introduce risk to the organization and a large expense. Whereas like most modern CCMSs, not all, but most are, you know, for a team of 10, 20, up to 50 writers, they're going to be 1 to 2 FTE equivalent at the max, probably more like 50% of an FTE. So like the straight economics of it just don't work. And I think that's the part of it that's been a little puzzling to me. And it's the part of the conversation that even today I've seen a little bit left out. And I'd like to see people like talking about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I had this every time I hear about Doxus code, even if somebody's using Ditta, but they're doing this almost in like, if they're doing something like Oxygen and Git, both great tools, but you have to have somebody committed to the administration of that pipeline. And it's the same if you're doing Doxus code. You've got to have people committed to the administration of that. When I have done admin level trainings in our CCMS, I mean, I'm not an expert in any of the other CCMSs out there, but when I've done admin level trainings in ours, I tell people, like, this is going to be our shortest training that we do. It's going to take 30 to 45 minutes. And the reason is because the system handles so many of the things behind the scenes that in a Doxus code framework, somebody has to be trained in Git. And that is what they are devoted to, is managing those pipelines. And a CCMS is designed to just do that stuff for you. Like, that is its one of its main jobs, is to do those kinds of administrative tasks. Like, it doesn't take that long to become an admin in a CCMS.
Yeah, I think that this is a classic tools argument. Like, you know, we've known for a long time that open source isn't free. We use some open source technologies. Like, every organization is going to use some open source technologies. I think the challenge becomes when it goes from being like a pragmatic decision, because either you have bespoke requirements that, you know, don't have enough people who need them for a vendor to support it well, and it's better to build internally, or there's legitimately an economic reason to use open source. I think the when you cross the line over into use open source, just because is where you start to run into challenges. And I both see that that is still really prevalent in the DOCSIS code paradigm, but I also see people starting to really question that. Yeah. And I think that that's, I don't necessarily think that's going to result in less DOCSIS code. I don't think DOCSIS code is going away because I think it's a valuable part of the ecosystem. But I think that it might mean that we're in a place now where it's going to be used at the right times for the right things rather than just dogmatically because it's the cool thing to do right now.
Yeah. What is, you made some comment to me recently about what if you ask developers to switch up the tools that are designed for them? I think it's a good point. It's a good point.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of a joke, more of a glib comment, but the comment was like,
that's who we are.
That's true. All right, fine. We'll end on that. So one of the primary justifications for DOCSIS code is always, well, it gets you closer to where the developers are. Like it's in the developer's tool chain. I mean, that's fundamentally DOCSIS code, right? And it's kind of wild to me because like if you went to developers and you were like, okay, you should use tools which are suboptimal for your work so you can be closer to the writers and the UX folks, people that you get laughed out of the room. Like it's like nobody would agree to do that.
Right.
And then you're in the situation where writers are part of the product, their deliverable is part of the product, but they also have this really unique aspect of what they deliver, which is that deadlines almost never, I'm not gonna say never, but basically never get extended for the docs, but they still have to be done.
Yeah.
Like how many teams have we seen working until 1 a.m. on a Friday because the release goes out on Monday, or the release technically went out on Friday. Whereas like if development isn't done, it just doesn't go out because the thing doesn't do anything.
So, right.
But like if it's done, if development's done, docs has to happen even when the timeline gets compressed. And I know so many writers that end up in that situation all the time. And then you're going to put them into something which is less efficient for them to actually get their jobs done. And like, I don't know. I mean, obviously I've got an opinion on this, but like
you have an opinion.
It's great. It's crazy.
All right. I have a hot take. I'm just going to say it and walk away. It's a mic drop for me. I think print media is coming back with a vengeance.
What kind of print media?
All of it, man. Just watch.
All of it?
Print media is going to come back.
I mean, I do actually subscribe to more magazines today than I ever have. So
same actually.
That's your data point.
And I want to hold them. I don't want to download them. I want to hold them.
That's true. I used to own a Kindle. I do not own a Kindle anymore. Or maybe I do, and it's in a box somewhere. But I buy books exclusively now.
Yep.
So you might be right. Maybe print's making a comeback.
It will.
All right. Have a good one. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great weekend. Catch you later. Guys.